Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Hi, this is Chris from Amateur Traveler, and this is a repeat episode. I'm on the road this week. I'm traveling in Germany. Right now, I'm in Wittenberg in Lutherstadt, and you'll hear more about that in an upcoming episode. But rather than just have no episode, this is an episode that you may have heard before, but it's an award-winning episode. This is an episode that won a Lowell Thomas Award from the Society of American Travel Writers. So I hope you'll enjoy it, and I'll talk to you again soon. I got my bags packed. Amateur Traveler, episode 399. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about medieval cities, World War I, and of course, French fries as we go to Belgium. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, if you're tired of sitting next to the crying baby on a plane, then a low-cost airline in Singapore called Scoot has the answer for you. On their flights, which have 41 seats, kids under 12 are not allowed. Or if you think you'd just rather be on the plane by yourself, then you may want to ask Tom Wagner if that's a good idea, because he woke up on an empty plane in the Houston's airport. They didn't notice that he had fallen asleep on the plane. No one woke him up. Instead, they all walked off the plane, locked it, and that's where he found himself. If that's not quite enough aloneness for you, there is an airport that you can have all to yourself that is for sale in Spain. The airport was originally built at a cost of $1.5 billion and includes the longest runway in Europe. It was built as the first privately run international airport. It is now for sale, and you can get it for only $150 million, and that is a bargain. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com.
Eyes front! Squadron, move to the left! Left! Turn!
Copy, move it to your left! And steps!
This week on Amateur Traveler, we're not going to do an interview, but I want to tell you about a trip that I did recently to Flanders, or to that part of Belgium that speaks Flemish or Dutch, so the western portion of Belgium. Then I did this on a press trip. I'm going to try and mix this up a little bit from the shows that we've done before. The reason for this particular trip is the calendar, and if you look at the calendar at the time that I am recording this show, it is 2013. And in 2014, it will be 100 years after the start of World War I. Belgium, and Flanders in particular, are starting to observe that anniversary and have a whole series of things that are planned here for the next 5 years. And we don't normally talk about events on Amateur Traveler because I want this show to have long-term value. But this is a little different opportunity because the events will be going on for so long, and because some of the things we'll be talking about will continue going on after 2019. A little background for those of you who are not history buffs or who grew up in a region that didn't study World War I. But in World War I, in 1914, the Germans invaded, really intending to invade France, whom they had declared war against. But Belgium was this neutral country that was in the way. And their intention was, and their belief was, that Belgium would immediately capitulate. I think the quote was, "What happens if the Belgian army were to fight? They would send in a police officer to arrest them." They didn't think that Belgium would put up much resistance. But what happened is this northern portion of the front that came in, the German army that came through Belgium and came in through Flanders in particular then, was stopped in part because there was more resistance than they expected, but also in part because the Belgians opened up the floodgates and flooded large portions of Flanders to slow down the advancing army. And they ended up at a city called Ypres in Belgium, or Ypres, if you're using the French pronunciation. And in this one region, a fairly small region, about 500,000 people died from 50 nations within just a few miles of this one city. And this was an old medieval city, like so many of the cities in Flanders, that had gained riches through the cloth trade, but that was leveled flat in World War I. And so one of the reasons we went on this trip is we went to see a couple different things. Within the region or surrounding Ypres, there are 150 cemeteries for World War I. The history of this war is more top of mind there than it is for us, as it would be also in the regions of France, for instance, that a lot of the fighting happened. Last year, in 2012, the Belgian bomb disposal unit found 105 tons of unexploded shells from World War I just through the routine plowing of the fields or digging of basements for new buildings or whatever. And that's sort of a typical year. In any given year, they are still finding soldiers' bodies from World War I who were lost and missing. This year, 2 months before I'm recording this, they found the bodies of 3 South African soldiers who were killed and reinterred them with the so many people who were buried in this area. And the one reason there are so many buried here is we went to the U.S. cemetery, for instance, and it's relatively small because the U.S. repatriated the dead. But that was not true with the Commonwealth countries that fought here. And this was the British portion and the Commonwealth portion of the line. So the Belgian army, but also so many soldiers from Canada and Australia and New Zealand and from Great Britain fought in this area. And I'm going to talk more about other portions of Flanders, but I want to talk just 2 things that I would recommend in terms of getting in touch with this portion of history. One is there is a ceremony at the Menin Gate. And the Menin Gate is a gate outside of Ypres. There is a memorial there that was built to hold 55,000 names of those that were missing, those who were presumed dead, but who they couldn't identify which body were which for the Commonwealth. Now, they ended up with 90,000 missing, and so that memorial actually continues on to a wall at the Tynecot Cemetery, which is a nearby, one of the larger nearby Commonwealth cemeteries. But at 8 o'clock every night, and most nights since World War I, except for the German occupation, there is a ceremony called Last Post, where 4 buglers come out and they blow the last post, which is a particular bugle melody done at the end of the day. After they blow that and there's a moment of silence, people will lay wreaths at this memorial. And many of the wreaths are poppies or are silk poppies because of the poem In Flanders Field. In Flanders Field, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row. And I have an article on the website that talks more detail, but this is already going to be more detail than most of you care about. But I would recommend go to the Last Post. And then if you are a big history buff, there are also nearby tours that you can take of some of the battlefields. And there is, for those of you who aren't but want to learn a little more, a wonderful museum in Ypres that talks about some of the history of World War I, recently updated. It's in the old cloth building. And Ypres is a fascinating city because it still looks like a medieval city, even though it was flattened. And so you'll see these old medieval row houses. But if you look at the top, the date, instead of saying 1420, will say 1920, because everything has been reconstructed. The public buildings largely being reconstructed with the big war reparation debts that Germany paid to Belgium. But in the big cloth, the Guild Hall, the big cloth hall, this old medieval reconstructed building, there's a wonderful World War I museum with great video and telling some of the stories and some of the hard-to-believe stories, like the Christmas Truce of 1914, where for one day and unofficially and spontaneously, the soldiers came out of the trenches and met in between in no man's land and sang Christmas carols before they went back the next day and continued to try and kill each other. Or the introduction of poison gas by the Germans and why they made that decision and what it was like, for instance, for the French and Canadian soldiers who were the victims of that first gas attack that happened there in Ypres. So recommend that. Also take a look on the Visit Flanders site for some of the other things that are going on. One interesting thing that's coming up here in April, and probably every April for the next 5 years, is going to be marking on one particular night where the trench lines were with a row of torches, with people holding torches basically from the sea to the French border. And so I think that would be an interesting and moving ceremony to keep that in mind. While you're in Flanders, there are, of course, many other things to do. And the things that I'm going to recommend, I went to a number of the cities there. I went to Antwerp and Ghent and Bruges and Ypres and Brussels. And Brussels isn't technically in Flanders, but it's obviously the capital city, and many people will fly into Brussels. All of those are wonderful cities, art cities as they are known. I want to recommend, first of all, three museums that I thought were outstanding that we went to in this particular trip. The first one is in Antwerp, and Antwerp was a port city. It still is the second biggest port city in Europe, and a lot of immigrants that came into the United States and to Canada in 1880 to 1837 came through Antwerp. And so there is a museum there for the Red Star Line that brought so many people to the United States and to Canada. It's a fascinating museum that is sort of the opposite end of Ellis Island. It's about the emigrants, all of these people leaving and why they left, the political instability or the pogroms or the poor harvests, and has a lot of multimedia, which is good because a lot of the signage doesn't have English, but the multimedia has subtitles or is in English. It has letters being sent back to families talking about, you know, a Polish family saying how Chicago is like Poland except perfect, or other people saying how difficult it is in the New World, but all of the different reasons they came over and then all of the process by which they bought a ticket all the way maybe from the Ukraine. They would buy a train ticket and a boat ticket and then a train ticket on the other end just by going to Red Star Line, and how their immigration from Europe and their immigration into the U.S. was facilitated by this whole process. All the medical exams they had to go through so that if they were going to be rejected when they got to Ellis Island, the Red Star Line would know, because if they were rejected, they would have to bring them back at the expense of the shipping line. The other better known museum in Antwerp is the Rubens House. And this is the museum that was a house owned by the artist Peter Paul Rubens. And it's a wonderful art museum because it's a very small museum. It doesn't take that long to see, that has both paintings that he created as well as the house that he lived, the studio where he painted, and paintings that he collected, being a fairly successful artist in his time. And I think for me, the work that he had displayed there, or they had displayed there, that I was the most interested in was a large painting, a painting of a battle scene that was incomplete. And so you could still see the process by which the painting happened. And I found that very interesting. Antwerp itself, let's just talk about the different cities. Antwerp, still a big harbor city, but with a wonderful downtown historic district. The town hall, the cathedral there, and the buildings around it, still very beautiful. We visited a chocolatier there that I'm going to recommend, at least is worth a visit. We went to Dominique Personne, and is actually a chocolatier originally from Bruges who's doing a lot of different things. But we tried chocolate there with bacon, and I tried a chocolate that had hot peppers in it. I did not try the one with wasabi or the one with cigar, and I really didn't want to try that one. But an interesting place to stop by and even just to look at what they're doing there. In terms of markets, there's also a market there that is just kind of fun. On Saturdays, there's a market there that's the bird market. And so this is where you would buy your pet birds or whatever. And it's just kind of a fun, colorful place if you're interested in taking pictures. And in terms of picturesque, the other thing we should say is I took the train into Antwerp, this time from Brussels. Wonderful getting around on the train in Belgium. And the train station in Antwerp is almost like another cathedral. It's a very beautiful building that you can tell that it was built back when train travel was very important. And even if you don't come by train, I would recommend that you stop at the train station and take a look at that. And it's right also right next to the zoo if you're interested in checking out the zoo in Antwerp. And Ghent has retained even more of its medieval core to it. And some of the canals, and you can do a canal boat tour in Ghent, for instance, as you can in Bruges, which we'll talk about in a second. Ghent is a little different in character, though, because now it's a huge university town. You can go up into the tower in Ghent. We went up in the clock tower in Ghent. Didn't get a chance to do the Ghent Castle, which is well known for its torture museum, or some of the other sites in Ghent. We did do a beer tasting, and I am not the one to recommend a beer to you because I am not a beer drinker. But for those of you who are interested in beers, we did do another episode on Belgium within the last couple years, and that is an episode where you'll hear more about, for instance, the Trappist beers and what kind of beer you should try when you go to Belgium. But Ghent, another city, just a beautiful city to walk around and take pictures of, just a beautiful medieval core to the city. We didn't spend quite as much time because that was actually on November 11th. And those of you in the U.S. may know that our Veterans Day, or those in the U.K., Remembrance Day is on November 11th because that was the last day of World War I. And so, again, many ceremonies coming up here in the next 5 years on that day especially, but there are always ceremonies more for the U.K. than for the U.S. We went to the U.S. cemetery in Flanders Field for the ceremony on the 11th. But for the Americans, the big day to commemorate the war dead is Memorial Day. So if you wanted the biggest day, for instance, to visit the Flanders Field Cemetery, the U.S. cemetery there, it would be on Memorial Day. And then I did get a chance on my own to go see Bruges again. And Bruges was one of the first places I went in Europe when we visited for the first time over 20 years ago. 25 years ago was our first trip to Europe. And Bruges is still a wonderful and magical place. Very touristy town, obviously. It gets a lot of tourism, but it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And even more so than Ghent, its medieval core, again, preserved. And you can go up in the clock tower for wonderful views of the city. Again, a wonderful city to wander around. Didn't do any of the museums this time in Bruges. Just walked through the city on a bit of a rainy November day in Belgium. Didn't do any of the canal boat rides. In fact, I don't even think the canal boats were running. But Bruges has been known. I haven't seen it recently, but it was known 25 years ago as the Venice of the North because it has a number of canals. Anytime you're in Belgium or anytime you're in Flanders, both Ghent and Bruges, either one of those would be a wonderful stop. And then we did also go to Brussels. Brussels, best known probably for the Grand Place in Brussels, the big central square. But I also want to recommend another museum, and the museum that we went to in Brussels. I went to two museums in Brussels, actually. One was the National Art Gallery. And unfortunately, I'm going to say, if you don't have a lot of time, I would pass on the National Art Gallery. It has a wonderful collection, but I don't think it's well presented. There is, for instance, a wonderful room full of Rubens just kind of hidden in the back someplace, not a lot of signage to help you find it. I found it poorly lit and not well laid out. So that's too bad. It could use a little updating. But just around the corner from the National Art Gallery, there's a wonderful gem of a museum. And that museum is the Musical Instrument Museum. And the Musical Instrument Museum, when you go in, you get headphones, and these headphones are your audio guide to the museum, but they have no spoken text. They only play musical instruments. And so you will walk up, for instance, on the first level, on the first floor, there is an exhibit about musical instruments from around the world. As you walk up to a particular musical instrument, they will play the music from that instrument or from that region. That uses that instrument. And just fun to go around. This is something I think kids would enjoy because you don't have to read a lot of signs. In fact, a lot of the signs aren't in English anyway. But you can walk up and you can see that this is a Hungarian bagpipe and what an interesting sound that makes. And These are panpipes from Greece or whatever. And then even more fun than that for me were the next two levels, which were more of the Western music. And you would walk up to an instrument that might look unfamiliar. For instance, horns that looked like they could be out of the Old Testament. But they would be playing music that would be classical music that I would recognize. But you would see instrument ideas that haven't necessarily survived till the current day. For instance, there was one brass instrument that was kind of like a trumpet if it were designed by Dr. Seuss, because it had seven different bells coming out of it. And so it was just this fascinating looking instrument. But of course, the music they were playing was very familiar. And so you would walk through and see how musical instruments, as well as the music, changed over time and see the fascinating different shapes of pianos, for instance, and how many different ways they thought about making a piano shape, pyramid-shaped pianos, one that looks like large jukeboxes, as well as more identifiable instruments. Fascinating little museum, and I think worth the time to stop. I mentioned before that getting around by train was easy. One of the reasons for that is the Brussels airport actually has a train station in the basement level of the airport, which I just wish every airport had. It just was easy to fly in and then get anywhere you wanted to in Belgium in a matter of a couple hours. Where I stayed, obviously, it was being put up by the Visit Flanders Tourism Board, so we stayed in nice hotels. I would recommend almost all of them. We stayed in both the Radisson and the Lindner, and I'll put names of these on the website in Antwerp. Both of those wonderful hotels, one just north of the train station, one just south, so both very easy to get to without having to get a cab or anything like that, walking distance. In Ghent, we stayed at the Marriott. The interesting thing about the Marriott is that it is on one of the canals in Ghent, but if you're on the canal and you're looking at it, it just looks like three row houses. So they actually built behind the facade of these old medieval buildings or faux medieval buildings so that it just blends in when you're looking at it from the historic side. So I thought that was a very nice touch. We stayed at the Novotel in Ypres, which is in the old city inside the walls. Again, nice hotel within walking distance of both the Cloth House as well as the Menin Gate. We stayed in one of the two nicest hotels in Brussels, the Dominican, and that's the one I actually have a harder time recommending. Lovely hotel, beautiful breakfast, wonderful rooms. It's an old monastery or convent, I'm not sure which, and there are plague Gregorian chants in the elevator. The reason I have a hard time recommending it, though, is very slow internet, especially for a high-end hotel. In terms of food, if you like seafood, which I do not, then the people with me would recommend when you are in Brussels, get the mussels. We ate at two restaurants in particular that I want to point out. One was Het Moment, which was in Ypres, and I'll put this again on the show notes. And that was just a wonderful steakhouse. Nothing like a wonderful steak with a béarnaise sauce to just really make it for a wonderful meal. Then we ate in an up-and-coming restaurant in Brussels, very fancy, called Jaloa, and that was very good as well. Interesting menu selection, especially for foodies. I would recommend that one. Actually, another restaurant that was great fun when we were in Antwerp, we ate at the 11th Commandment, and that is a small, more of a pub than a restaurant, just off of the main square, not too far from the main square. And it is decorated with old church artwork, and so you're surrounded by the saints as you're sitting there drinking your pint, and just a very interesting and very eclectic restaurant. Very difficult to describe, but a very interesting restaurant. Of course, when you're in Flanders, when you're in Belgium in general, the fries are definitely practically required, and I did take the time to eat chocolate, as I mentioned, and to have at least one Belgian waffle. That, though, it would have been good to have somebody to share with, because they're awfully big. So that's my trip to Flanders. That's what I wanted to tell you about that. If you have any questions, shoot me an email and we'll talk about your trip. I'm not going to go into news from the community this week because I'm trying to get down to my hometown to celebrate an early Christmas with my family and to celebrate my birthday, because today is my birthday. If you're wondering what to get me for my birthday or for Christmas or to celebrate the 400th episode of The Amateur Traveler, which should be next week, how about an iTunes review? We're currently accepting 5-star reviews, so if you go to iTunes and let people know that you enjoy The Amateur Traveler, other people will be able to find us. If you have any questions about this episode or about The Amateur Traveler in general, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also leave a comment on amateurtraveler.com, join us in the Facebook community, or follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. Instead of ending this with the usual Amateur Traveler theme song, we're going to play this out with the last post-ceremony from Eber.
Of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.